Who's got it better than us?
Nobody! Your home for the best sports coverage in Utah. You're listening to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. Maybe I should rethink calling Pitt McAfee Armpit. Ben, the...
It no longer applies.
The executive, though, that he got in that showdown with, who made him put a shirt on, is now fired. Just got canned, like the mouse. The mouse got rid of Pitt Armpit's arch nemesis.
Yeah.
Yeah, how about that? And then second real quick story I want to bring up with you, Ben, and then we can start talking some Jazz and some NBA. Did you see that LSU star Haley Van Lith has hit the transfer portal?
Okay. She was the one who notoriously threw up her arms in the famous video now in front of Caitlin Clark after hitting the ninth three.
I would have transferred before that game even ended. You want to know why?
Kim, take me out.
Kim totally hung her out to dry.
Yes, she did.
Like, I don't understand how, and no offense to Iowa, the rest of their team or whatever, but how do you not run three people at Caitlin Clark on any play? It's not fair to say, hey, you, Haley, go take Caitlin out of the game. That's not a good game plan. That's not gonna work. I feel terrible for her because she was embarrassed on national television in what was bad game planning. Not bad play on her part, but bad game planning.
Yeah, I'm a little confused about what happened because they opened the game, and I don't know if this was somebody not listening in the several walkthroughs and practices they'd gone over, but they were going under on screens on Caitlin Clark, which is like, actually, Caitlin Clark was pretty terrible inside the paint the other night. She was not making her layups very well. She was not finishing near the rim. She was cooking from three, though.
That's coaching. That's coaching.
That is my thought. Like, did Kip Mulkey tell them to go under? And they're like, we're going to see if Caitlin can beat us. The problem is, we see this with the Jazz. One of the major issues with the Jazz right now. A player sees a couple of shots go in early in the game because the Jazz just don't bring this intensity in the first quarter that they have in, like, the third quarters lately. And once a team sees the ball go in the first quarter, they're on the rest of the game. These players are too good. Caitlin Clark is too good. If the ball goes in early, she's on the rest of the night. You have to make it hard early. So exactly like you said, where you would hit somebody in the midsection if they were a shooter in an old guy game, you want her thinking about it every time she shoots. If she thinks it's going in every time she shoots it because you went under on the first three possessions and she knocked down threes, it's going to be a long night.
Oh, going under against Caitlin Clark is ludicrous. But your point about the Jazz is interesting because they can simultaneously go under every screen but still get dunked on most possessions, which is, I think, hard to do.
It's bad at everything.
Like, you shouldn't be... Like, the idea, if you go under the screen, is that you're not going to get beat to the rim.
You go... Right, exactly, right. Like, you back off. So
that's the idea. That's the point.
So you're there to meet them in the mid-range so they don't have a head of steam.
Correct. That's the idea.
And then they're still just dissecting you.
And they're still smoking you at the rim and cannon threes in your face. Like, it's the worst.
It's a problem.
It's a huge problem. The Jazz defensively, I feel like you and I are kind of the only ones that talk about how bad it's been defensively. I mean, if you really want to look at why the Jazz have lost how many in a row, you know, we can focus on Lowry's been out and they haven't been able to score and all this stuff. They can't guard a chair.
No, historically bad defense. Historically.
Like, historically,
bad.
Worst in the league since the trade deadline by a mile.
Yeah, I can pull that up. No,
And listen, if... Like, you're young, you're going to have trouble playing defense because you don't know all the angles and all that stuff, but...
That's more than that.
There's no excuse to be historically bad.
Defensive rating since February 8th, the trade deadline. The Jazz are 122.8, 30th in the NBA. 29th is the Toronto Raptors, who, again, have lost 15 in a row. They are 118.9, so they're almost three full points better. Well, I'll tell you.
By the way, that's a canyon.
The difference between the next time you get to 3 points is, it's seven teams ahead of. There's
three points in defensive rating is a schism.
3 points better than Toronto is, yeah, seven teams better. So for that to be, there's seven teams equivalent between the Jazz and the next worst team in the NBA defensively. And the let's see, where are the Jazz offensively?
So, yeah, we can get into the weeds on, okay, Bryce Sensabaugh can score at the NBA level, and have you seen how he's shooting, and 22 points and all this stuff, and it's like, well, I watched this guy get six dunks.
Yeah, no, the scoring's great. It's the easiest thing to judge if a player's doing well in the NBA. And defense is notoriously the hardest to figure out if they're doing it well. Because, like,
it's subjective.
Patrick Beverley can look like he's playing good defense because he slaps the floor and runs around and yells after a stop. Your friend Rusty Westbrook would tell us, yeah, he's got you all fooled. He's just running around out there. Like, are you actually impacting the game defensively? There's a lot more than just blocking shots. You know, there's a lot more than just running quickly. So I think that's an interesting part. I've been asked a lot, what should the Jazz do this offseason? We do my mailbag every Tuesday. And that was one of them. Like, prototype player, what would you add to the Utah Jazz? And she's like, man, they could use good defense anywhere. Anywhere.
Anywhere.
And, look, there's kids in the draft that are good defensive players. Reed Shepard at Kentucky's really good. Castle at UConn's really good. I'm not expecting a rookie to come in and change my defense. I think Taylor Hendricks is going to be a great defensive player. He doesn't know what he's doing right now, but like he alone is not good enough to do it. If the Jazz are going to spend some money or make trades or whatever they want to do, man, you got to start putting some defense on the floor.
And I do feel for them when they don't have John Collins or Walker Kessler and they traded away the clinic because Yurtseven.
Yep.
And who else has played big?
Kenny Lofton, buddy.
Okay.
Big Ken Lofton Jr.
You say big, he's like 6'5".
It's not the big I'm talking about.
Right, but the big that counts in basketball, the height. Very short, man. That's not fair. He's not fair.
No, he's like 6'9". Yeah, he's just not 7 feet tall.
No.
Nor is he known as a defensive player.
And, you know, Šamanić likes to shoot, but he's not much of a deterrent at the rim, I'm afraid.
I will tell you, I'm not terribly worried about the team learning bad habits.
Because they're not going to be on this
team
much longer?
Because what team are we talking about? But if Keontae is going to be a long-term part of the team, Taylor Hendricks could be a long-term part of the team. Maybe Bryce is. Maybe they're not. I don't know. But like the idea is you draft these rookies. Hopefully they turn into somebody if you're a Jazz fan. You want them to learn good defense. You want them to learn that like, yeah, Will Hardy can say we're not negotiating defense. You have to play defense and you have to pass. But like no one's playing defense and they still get minutes. And what else is he supposed to do? There's not enough players to put out there otherwise.
You can't take away minutes from anybody because what? Who are you going to play? You?
Right. Yeah. I've lost my eligibility.
Are you going to call Booner down from the broadcast perch?
But if you're worried about that, there is actually an area there where you could be learning some bad habits. And I will say that was one of the things that Donovan Mitchell never grew out of. He learned really bad defensive habits his rookie season. Why? Because the Jazz had good defenders around him. Ricky Rubio at one spot. I can't remember if Royce was coming up still at that point. I don't think he had like fully turned into Royce O'Neal. But you had Rudy Gobert. So you had bookended your defense with a good defensive point guard and a good center, and it was enough to get you where you needed to go. And Donovan's like, all I got to do is shoot? I think 22 shots a game as a rookie? No one gets this green light. Great. Life's good. Dante Exum was on that team, played some defense. Like, fine. Then Donovan never learned to play defense and never took accountability for it.
Backing up your point, I had Donovan on my show the day after the draft, the introduction. And it was at the Grand America because the arena was being renovated. So we were at the Grand America, and they had all the rookies there. I'm trying to remember the other rookies besides Donovan. It was like three dudes. I was the guy that John Stockton made him draft from Gonzaga, and it was somebody else.
Yeah. I'd have to go back and look. But anyway.
But do you know what the rap on Donovan, do you know what he talked about in that very first interview?
You think Rick Pitino's just going to let you get on the floor?
That's what he said. He said, I'm a defensive guy. I play defense. I can come into this this roster and contribute immediately.
Oh, are you?
And to your point, I don't think Donovan Mitchell should be a bad defender. He's not tall, but he is long and super athletic.
Right.
You should not be a net negative on the defensive side, I think, if you've got Donovan Mitchell's aura.
Agreed.
What everything he's got going on. He's obviously not a moron either. So you can't tell me he can't be like Joe Ingles and learn angles and learn how to be a savvy defender and He didn't. And he wasn't asked to from day one. He was asked to come in and shoot the ball, which no rookie has ever asked to do. He was lucky enough to be asked to do that. And, you know, we saw the same thing with Jimmer at BYU. Hey, Jimmer, go out there and guard. I don't know what you're talking about, Coach. I'm Jimmer. That's not my job. That's Jackson Emery's job.
By the way, Nigel Williams-Goss.
That's him. Yep, yeah. Nigel Williams-Goss. I told you, the guy that John Stockton made him draft from Gonzaga.
Yeah.
Who was the other guy? Was it...
Boy, that was a great draft for the Jazz, and also they traded Josh Hart that night. I think they gave away the pick. Josh Hart's turned into a superb NBA player. Anyways, neither here nor there.
Yeah, I still remember that day, though. Because we didn't think we were interviewing... It's funny to look at it now. We didn't think we were interviewing the team's next star.
No, by no means.
We thought we were interviewing a rookie guard who could come in. You know what's funny is that, and I never bought this, but the narrative around the team at the time was that Rodney Hood was going to be the team's best scorer and leaned upon to be the team's number one, you know, and that lasted for 0 minutes in a game. He was never that, and Donovan Mitchell was that. It was weird.
On draft night, the Utah Jazz traded Josh Hart and Thomas Bryant for Tony Bradley.
That's the one. Tony Bradley was the third.
Thomas Bryant had a better NBA career, still in the NBA, than Tony Bradley, and Josh Hart's a legit superb player. That was a good trade for the Jazz to get Donovan Mitchell and a horrendous trade to lose those two. Anyways, you got to teach some good habits, and that's why, honestly, I might be willing to bring in some veterans who teach good habits. Guys who, and you know what, that was kind of a flaw of Kelly Olynyk, was he wasn't always teaching the best habits, unless your habits were, as you like to say.
Oh, he was teaching all the best habits. What are you talking about?
Dive at somebody's knee when they're not looking.
Oh, man, I think.
Dislocate a shoulder or two.
Kelly should be in the league till he's 45 for that reason alone. If I'm getting a young, scrappy big, I'm bringing in the clinic and be like, all right, teach this guy your magic.
He's going to get hurt in practice. That's why you don't want Kelly anywhere near your young stars.
This guy your magic. You know how you win in the playoffs? You dislocate Kevin Love's shoulder.
It is interesting. Speaking of Josh Hart's, a good example of this. And my beloved Knicks, who are falling apart at the seams because they just can't stay healthy, and Julius Randle's lost for the season. They said, we've got some decent talent. We need to put defensive players around him. We need to improve our defense. What are we going to do? You know what they did? They went and traded for a bunch of defensive players. Like, we kind of think defense is this abstract thing compared to offense. Like, well, you get a score, a 20-point-per-game score, and all of a sudden it's going to improve your offense. Like, yeah, Trae Young would come in and improve your offense right away. Good defensive players do the exact same thing. Like, it actually is pretty straightforward. Go and get good defensive players, and your defense will improve. They went out and got Isaiah Hartenstein, good defensive player. OG Anunoby, good defensive player. Josh Hart, good defensive player. All of a sudden, Julius Randle, who doesn't care on that side of the floor, is covered up because you have all these guys who are willing to play. Jalen Brunson's not a great defensive player.
Quite the opposite.
Little. Tiny. Wants to shoot 25 times a game.
Yep.
But put Josh Hart next to him. Put all these guys who will defend, and you look a lot better. So that's – if the Jazz are going to start cashing in these picks, which I'm not sure they're going to do this offseason, but you got to start getting defensive players. You have to start looking that direction, whether that's, you know, trying to sign a Drew Holiday in the offseason if you wanted to get old just to set an example for your young players and start winning games right away. You can do that. It's actually not as hard as I think sometimes we make it out to be. I'm not saying it's not hard to be good, but if you want to improve certain things, go get the guys with the reputations that actually do those things.
Yeah, but that's not as fun as watching it go in the hoop, man.
It's definitely not. But you know what Orlando did? How does Orlando have the second best defense in the NBA? They drafted a bunch of defensive guys.
Yep.
Every time they got into the NBA draft, they focused on defense over just offense. Even last year, a guy who's not playing, Anthony Black, best defensive guard in the draft. He's not playing right now. When he steps on the floor, he's going to be a great defensive player. Jalen Suggs.
And nobody wants to play them.
Gary Harris.
If they weren't allergic to putting it in the hoop, that would be helpful.
That would help. And that's their balance, right? They're going to have to say, well, we need a 20-point-per-game scorer. Are we going to go spend, you know, $30 million, $45 million next offseason on Paul George or whatever it is?
They're hoping Banchero is that, right?
And then they're going to need another guy. But yes, absolutely.
That's what
yes, that's their goal, though. They have their go-to scorer.
Because then all of a sudden, once you get into swapping defensive guys for offensive guys, then you're the Jazz in their last rendition.
In the second year of Donovan Mitchell.
And then it doesn't work.
Yeah, you got
to find the
balance.
Because you go from one extreme to the other. It would be better for Orlando if Banchero just went from 22 a game to 28 a game.
Yeah.
Because they're not asking him to play defense. He's the only player on the team they're not asking to play defense. I brought up Orlando stats, by the way, to see where they were in offensive rating. 23rd.
Oof, yeah. It's not good enough. You got to get better than that.
second defensive rating over the entire season, 23rd.
How did Minnesota offensive. Get so good defensively? What did they do? They traded for a person named Rudy Gobert, who's the best defensive player on the planet. Like, it's not a science. It's not that difficult to do. Go get Rudy. You want to improve your defense? Because Cat is a terrible defensive player. Go get him. They drafted McDaniels. They added Ant, who's a terrific defender. They went and got some guys, though, who the focus is defense. And they made it work. Jazz were a good defensive team when they had Rudy Gobert. So go get your good defensive players. And that's why, if I get asked, like, who should the Jazz target in the draft? I honestly haven't looked at the draft that much yet. I will when the season comes to an end in six games. Get guys who play both sides of the floor. Because yep. you can't do anything without that.
I've been saying this for years. It's the reason I love Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah. Just go get a guy who plays both sides of the
both
floor.
Both ends. Jason Tatum. Jaylen Brown, for that matter.
I would rather a guy, at this point, if I'm the Utah Jazz, who's a 6 out of 10 defensive offensively and an 8 out of 10 defensively versus the other way around, right? Like, if this guy has some red flags about whether or not he's going to become a good offensive player, but you know he's going to be a good defender, I think I could probably make that work. I think I could probably figure out a way to make that happen because spacing in the NBA now, I know it's critical. It feels like you can use that to help guys who aren't traditionally good offensive players find a role.
Or you just go out there and draft LeBron's kid.
Get Bronny.
Get Bronny in. See what he can do. Spend one of those first rounders on him.
If you missed it this morning, he's both declared for the draft and entered the transfer portal, which means he's not going to hire an agent because Rich Paul is already working for him behind the scenes, so he doesn't need to officially hire anybody. Get some workouts, go to the combine, see if he has a chance to get drafted.
You know, I genuinely feel bad for him. I shouldn't, because he's going to make it into the NBA without being good enough to make it in the NBA, probably. But the pressure of being LeBron's child would be difficult in and of itself, and he's not the best high school player in the country.
He's not, like, he's not one of the 60 best players in college basketball that should get drafted next year.
No, he should transfer to go find a good coach, develop his skills, and see how it goes.
Even if he doesn't get to play with his dad.
Which should not be a consideration at all for him or his father. That shouldn't be a thing. That is one of the dumbest things, and I bet you it comes to fruition because it's just the type of thing that LeBron would consider important. But this is the dumbest thing ever. Why wouldn't you want your son to be in the best position possible to succeed? Not grab a headline being LeBron and Bronny playing together. That lasts 10 minutes.
Right.
LeVar Ball, remember his headlines when he got, what was the crappy son?
LiAngelo,
camp invite for the Hornets. And then LeVar was like, three of my boys playing in the league. And it's like, not really.
Also.
But what did that bring him, is my point. It didn't help him. It didn't help anybody. Everybody forgot about it 10 minutes later. I don't think we've heard from LeVar since.
And I know everyone's like, we've never seen this before. We've never seen a father and a son play. Here's the thing. Look at how many good 37, 38, 39-year-old athletes there are. There's a ton. Like, we're in this weird spot where guys are playing until they're in their late 30s and they're staying very relevant and at least good enough to be on a roster. LeBron and Bronny are not going to be the last father-son duo that have a chance to play in the NBA together.
Nor does that matter.
Nor
does it matter.
But if you thought it mattered, it's only going to matter for a couple of years because we're going to start seeing more 38-year-old, 39-year-old guys with kids that are going into the NBA.
Do you think we've heard of Ken Griffey Jr. because he was awesome or because he played for 10 seconds on the same roster as his dad?
Right. Would it be a footnote if K Jr., had been terrible and then played on the same team?
Never made it out of AA.
Nobody cared. Yeah, it was an artificial last game of the season. They call him up, put him in the show so we can play with his dad. Nobody would have cared.
Ever.
It's that Ken Griffey Jr. was the best player in the sport at that age.
Turned into the best player in the sport.
And his dad was still good. His dad was still playable.
That's it.
Right. That's a very good
point. It's actually a footnote in both of their careers that doesn't matter to anybody. So I know that storyline bugs me. Is Bronny good enough to succeed in the NBA or not? And if the answer is no, go back to college.
Especially go back
to the lab. Work it out for a couple of years.
Especially if the potential is for him to get there. And there is there with Bronny. He's got the body. He's super athletic. If he can improve his skills to get there, he could be a long-term NBA player.
So having him make a decision that is bad for him just because of some feel-good headline, I think is foolish.
I'm with you.
But we'll see what he does. I hope LeBron gives them the advice. Go find a good coach.
Go play at Iowa State.
And get a lot better.
They want to play defense. You want to play defense. That's your matchup.
Yeah.
You're not going to be an offensive star. Go play at Iowa State.
And then LeBron needs to say, I'm going to stay out of it and let you make the best decisions for you, which is probably more difficult to do than just saying it. But I think that would be the best course for him.
And no, the Jazz shouldn't draft him with hopes that it would bring LeBron to Utah.
Absolutely not. Don't LeBron is 55.
Don't do that. That's stupid.
And then you have to turn over control of the entire franchise to LeBron and Rich Paul, which you don't want to do, I would guess.
Yeah.
Maybe they do. Do you think Clutch, sorry, I know we're over. Do you think Clutch retains its current status once LeBron retires?
No.
I don't either. All right, stay tuned. We'll have more coming up next. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Whether it's the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, or Aggies, these guys have got you covered.
Trying to eat, fellas.
You're locked on to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson.
1, 2, 3, move it.
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. This isn't sports, Ben, but did you see this this story on Easter that somebody stole $30 million in cash from a money storage facility in California? That's got to be the biggest robbery in history, right?
Maybe cash heist, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, not like, I mean, even art. I mean, I don't know. Well, there's been some pretty priceless works of art stolen, I suppose. But $30 million in cash?
Hitting them on Easter. They didn't even recognize it until the next day. They didn't realize it until Monday that the money was gone.
Inside job, right? Gotta be.
Someone knew something.
Someone knew
how to get there. Nobody would be around.
Where the money was? Are we in the wrong line of work? Although I don't think I'm smart enough for this thing.
No, I know I'm not.
And I'd immediately go out and buy something stupid, and the FBI would be like, yeah, we know it was you.
According to the LA Times, the previous largest cash heist in the city happened in September 12th, 1997, when $19 million was stolen.
Did they catch those people?
Those suspects were eventually caught.
Do we assume that they're going to get these people?
Oh, yeah.
Or do we assume that they're like, they're on a Caribbean island already? That's what I'd do.
I think you got to do the, you've seen Goodfellas. You can't buy a fur coat.
Yeah,
right?
You got to lay low.
No, you can't. The problem is with 30 million, this is why I don't understand art heists unless you know the Silk Road on the dark web to be able to sell the world's most famous paintings, how you would ever do it.
That's the key then, right? Because you know there's billionaires somewhere that have like a secret art vault of stolen stuff.
Of course. I suspect you could go overseas and find.
Yeah. All sorts of stuff.
Willing to buy whatever. So they can have it in their private collection on right. their yacht or whatever. $30 million at least is, you can spend it.
Kind of. Don't they keep track of the bills and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I don't. That's the thing. Do they know every serial code on every number that's going to pop up as soon as it gets deposited to a bank and they can track it back? Then you're in trouble.
I think that's where you got to launder it, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, you can't go wash it in Vegas, though, right? Like, you can't just go play blackjack $30 a table.
No,
maybe
you
can.
You buy cryptocurrency. Isn't that the whole reason it started?
Yeah. But people are going to recognize if you're buying 30 mil in Dogecoin.
Well, you know, piece it out or whatever, but it's untraceable. That's the point. I figured that's why they started mining the stupid stuff in the first place.
Absolutely,
like,
of course, yes.
They're like, oh, man, we just made $1 billion in cocaine smuggling. We got to do some of this thing.
Something. Yes, sure. Absolutely. Why would you create an alternative currency? Only to wash the clean
only
currency.
Only to launder
dirty
money. Yeah, yeah, right. So you buy a bunch of Dogecoin and then you hit Jamaica.
Maybe. Pretty volatile, that Dogecoin. Be careful with that.
Well, I'm not a crypto weirdo. I don't know what the hot thing is these days. Maybe jump into the
what's
NFT
Ethereum
world.
Ethereum doing? Yeah. Don't buy those monkeys. Those NFT monkeys that everyone was buying for $150,000 that you can't sell now.
I've got
just so worthless.
I've got a really good buddy that was super into that stuff, and I follow him on Twitter, and he would be tweeting about that nonstop.
Rudy
I don't
Gobert
think
probably
I don't
lost
think,
a $500,000 one weekend.
Don't think I've seen him tweet about NFTs in 2 years.
No, they're non-fungible. That's why you want them. There's not a real thing there.
Got to chalk that up to a mistake. That was a mistake. I made a huge mistake.
I mean, $30 million is a substantial amount of fungibleness, right? Fungiality. That's a lot of cash. Like, I hate having $80 in my wallet.
Well, it's got to be heavy at very least.
Right. You got to have a truck. You've got to have a whole system. I mean, it's like heat. It's like Ocean's 11. Like, you've got to have vans to move $30 million. It's not a single suitcase. You got to do this solo too, right? It's got to be a DB Cooper situation. I don't think it's possible to do solo, but I don't trust anyone else to do this. You couldn't do this with another person.
Well, that's why you murder everybody after.
Sure.
I mean, that's usually the way things are done, right?
Yeah.
That was the lesson from Goodfellas. That's what De Niro does, right? He walks around and murders everybody.
Close all the loose ends.
Yeah. You could do that part.
Think so?
Yeah.
You think I have that in me? I've never been pushed to that place, but I respect that you think I could.
Oh, sure. Dig deep.
So I'm the kill guy in the heist crew.
Yeah.
Okay. What are you?
Oh, I'm watch.
You're the rat.
He's the getaway driver.
Do we think Jake is like a very courteous driver? It's the problem.
Very much.
Jake like doesn't like road rage. Jake doesn't speed.
I do not.
Takes a while to pull out of his spot. We always park pretty close to each other, and I leave 4 minutes before you do every day after the show.
I got
to
get it together.
Yeah, right. That's the problem. Like,
he's the lookout guy that falls asleep and then they get caught.
Probably. I was tired.
What happened with Jake? Oh, his wife called mid-heist.
Yeah, I had to go.
He had to go.
I had to bounce.
Daughter forgot her lunch.
Oh, man. So we had to bring lunch. It was an emergency. I forgot to make her turkey roll up this morning.
The youngest got sick at the daycare, so we had to go pick up.
Yeah. We've got to have priorities here.
So I'm left holding $30 million in the middle of Wilshire Boulevard.
Should have hired somebody else, I guess.
You want for these guys to get away with it?
No.
Oh, I am.
Why? Somebody's paying for that 30 mil, and that's not fair.
Oh, it's federally insured. They just print that money up again. Get yours. I'm not endorsing stealing $30 million.
You are, though.
But if you're on the back end of having done it already, see how long we can make it last.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, narc. This is why you're not in my heist crew.
I'm anti-stealing.
This is not why you're in my heist crew.
Rooting for them to get away with it?
They've already gotten partially away.
They didn't earn that dough.
Arguable?
No.
That's an arguable fact.
Factual.
They got the money, and they're gone now.
That's not earning it.
Sure. The guy who stole my PlayStation, who broke into my house, didn't technically earn it.
Nope.
But he got away with it. At least I think he's gotten away with it. I haven't been followed up by the SLCPD.
Did not earn it.
And then you say,
but breaking into my house was really hard, so he kind of earned it. No, that's not how it works. That's not it.
What's the most legit way to... Can you actually earn $30 million in your lifetime?
Me?
Do you think there's a way to do it? Not you.
No. Yes, for people to earn... It happens all the time. People earn $30 million.
People make $30 million. Earn and make are a different term here.
No, because earn legitimately... is earning it. Whether you think, like Ben Anderson thinks they deserve it or not, doesn't mean you can change the definition of a word.
You bet, like, okay, medical discovery, $30 million. No problem. You've earned $30 million. You put the work in, you go to school, you learn how to bond different whatever, DNA strands. Sure, you've earned $30 million.
But you don't think like Jeff Bezos, who changes retail forever, has
sold
earned
books
anything?
Online? Because you started selling books online? No, because I know the lady who owns the used bookstore by my house. She's doing the same work. She's now worth $30 million. No one's giving her $30
million. I don't think it was just about moving books. But this says a lot about you. Sarah, are you rooting for them to get away with it or not?
I'm saying what Jeff Bezos did to get his $30 billion and what this guy did to get his $30 million, or a woman, it's probably not all that dissimilar.
I don't know.
Yes, you do. You hope they get caught today. Because you're a good and decent person.
I mean, if they went through all that trouble and they got away with it, isn't that kind of on the company for not having better security?
No.
Boom. He's exposing holes. He's doing them a favor. I'm with you. He's doing them a favor. You got to have somebody working on Easter. That's your problem. You gave everyone Easter Sunday off.
Have you seen did you see the California politician? Like they are having a problems with people stealing the catalytic converters off of cars. And so the politician's response was to rail against the car manufacturers.
Get rid of catalytic converters.
No, they were saying, oh, you make them too easy to steal.
They are exposed. If you climb under the car, it's just sitting there. And you can just weld them into a new car. And they cost
$500. Stop stealing them. Do something about the people stealing them. Don't blame Toyota for not making some.
Putting them behind Kevlar.
See, this is the thinking. Like, I'm rooting for these people to get away with it. No. They should have made it harder to steal. Maybe. Not the point.
As someone who's spent too much money on my life on catalytic converters entirely, I'm with you. The catalytic converter thing is an issue. And people got to stop stealing catalytic converters.
How dare you, Toyota? Well, what about the people stealing it? Why don't we talk about that for a few minutes?
If you were to steal something worth 30 mil, what's the best thing?
To steal? Worth
like
$30 million?
A bunch of diamonds?
Probably.
Because you're just like carrying them in a little bag?
Yeah.
You could put them in a sock in
but
your drawer.
It's tough to fence diamonds that.
Yeah, I don't know how
too.
To sell diamonds.
Little hot diamonds.
Yeah. I told you I was in Vegas for Summer League in a past life. And I was standing out in the valet at one of the hotels. And I found a $100 chip on the ground. I didn't know what it was. I saw a black and white chip. I don't gamble at all, so I don't know what the different colors are. And I stepped on it. And I thought, like, I'm going to see if anyone comes looking for it. And if they look for it, I'll give them their $100 back. Like, if someone's like, oh, shoot, I dropped the thing. Nobody was around. Nobody came back. So I stole that $100 and I put it in my pocket. I was so scared to go down to the table where you exchange your money to get the money back with the fear that this might be a counterfeit
thing.
Chip. And I'm going to get arrested for trying to pass a counterfeit chip. I wasn't. I got my money. It was nice. But I was that worried that, like, a legitimate chip that had the logo of the casino I was outside of, that clearly some bozo opened their suit jacket and it fell out. I was terrified to go to the place to do exactly what you're supposed to do with those, which is cash them in. So, yeah, I wouldn't know what to do with diamonds, famous painting, cash.
Ben would be the guy that gets away with it, and then the second that people start to suspect him, he breaks.
Absolutely. 100%.
Immediately.
I'm the lady who gave Shohei the ball back. 100%.
I don't think that's you. I think apparently you're much more devious than
that. Well, I'm rooting for the Shohei lady to get away.
She earned that ball.
Did she? She just took it.
She caught it. That's earning it, and that's in within
this
the rules.
This guy caught $30 million in his suitcase and his van. While he was wearing gorilla-style fatigues to break into this money heist.
Yeah,
what
by
is
the
this
way,
building? What are these buildings? That it just, it's a cash business?
A money storage facility.
What
I had
does
no
that mean?
I had no idea such things existed.
You mean a bank?
So there's just $30 million stacked up in some random warehouse. Have you seen a picture of it? It looks just like a random warehouse. Look at it. Doesn't look like a bank.
I guess I drive by all these warehouses, and we don't have as many as some places do. I don't know what's going on in any of those warehouses.
Oh, yeah. Well,
what are you guys doing in there?
They did their research.
You got $30 million cash? That's why Jake is right. It has to be an inside job.
Absolutely.
There's that. They make that building look like that on purpose.
Or
right?
Maybe they overheard a worker talking about where he works, and then they scouted it out.
Still technically an inside job, even if you overhear it.
Okay. Because you got inside
info. You got inside info. All right, stay tuned. We'll wrap up the show coming up next.
$30 million is not even that much money anymore.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love, the teams you can't live without.
Get a sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, want to remind you about our friends at Peach Doors and Windows. Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255, Peach Doors and Windows. Ben, DJ Burns, my favorite basketball player left in the NCAA tournament, the center from NC State, has made it clear that he has zero interest in playing football.
Okay.
Can I tell you how aggravated I would be if I was DJ Burns and the number one storyline about me was,
why aren't you an offensive tackle?
Why aren't you playing football? You're like, I'm in the Final Four playing basketball.
Playing very well, actually. Yeah.
And I'm sure that he doesn't think he's going to be the number one pick in the draft or anything, but I'm also sure that he thinks that he's probably got a professional basketball playing career ahead of him, which honestly, he probably does. I don't know if
he'll... not be in the NBA.
Yeah, I don't know if he'll stick in the NBA. I'm guessing he'll make a roster as a rookie or probably has the possibility to do so. But certainly in his mind, he's not thinking that I'm not a basketball player. And everybody's coming to me and saying, hey, have you ever thought about playing football? Duh. I woke up this morning and I thought, what is this strange sport football you're talking about? And not to mention, you're basically calling him a fat guy to his face.
You know, I guess it's the same way when we see seven-footers. We're like, oh, wonder if he played basketball. And football players always do this, or football people always do this. 6'9", what is he, 270, 275, quick feet. They're like, brother, you are a left tackle. You are a right tackle tomorrow. Give me 6 weeks to teach you how to use your hands and use your feet, and I think I can turn you into something. And you can go make a bunch of money as a tackle in the NFL. But you're right. He's like, yeah, I've been training my whole life to be a basketball player. And yes, you know what? He probably played football at some point in his life.
That, what you said about him and the football thing has been true probably since he was 14.
Yep. In the wrong sport. Yeah, playing the wrong sport.
Right. How many football coaches are like, oh man, I'll make you the best tackle? He doesn't want to do that, yeah. Apparently.
I mean, people said it about Karl Malone forever, too.
Yeah.
Right? It was always Carl's thing. Yeah, if he could be a tight end, be a tackle, whatever he wants to do.
I'm in the Final Four.
I'm doing my thing.
I'm currently playing basketball.
I'm the guy right now.
In the Final Four. And all you bozos can ask me about is whether or not I want to play football. I'm going to feed you your own backside. That would be so annoying to me. And this is like a headline on ESPN. Not interested in playing football. Why is that the storyline around the guy? Can't you at least give him a couple of weeks to get done with his basketball career?
Right. Let him wrap it up. We see guys make the jump. We see good NBA players switch over and play wide receiver. I think that's probably a more realistic transformation for a guy who's never played a lot of football than tackle.
Give me a sports writer you really respect or somebody you'd listen to.
Chris Camerani.
What if Chris read one of your jazz pieces and he sat down with you, Ben, and he goes, God, Ben, you ever thought about writing ad copy?
I would take that a different way. But yeah, right. I don't know. I'm doing it here.
Man, you would have a career writing ads, bro. You should really do that. You'd have a real... I mean, I'm looking at your writing style here, and it pretty much stinks for a sports writer. But for an ad copywriter, that's you, bro.
Yeah.
You can make $1 million.
Like, I don't know. I've kind of worked here, and someone's employing me at the moment.
And it's going okay,
It's going okay.
Yeah, right. I think I'm doing pretty well on this beat. Yeah, but, I mean, writing ads...
Let me tell you what's better.
Can you imagine how insulting that'd be?
Here's the thing. The problem is it's not even people who know better than DJ Burns. It's people who know less than DJ Burns telling him to switch to football.
Right.
It's one thing if Chris were to talk to me. Chris is a better writer than I am. If Chris wanted to tell me, hey, I think you'd be better, I'd be like, oh, he might be onto something. If it was somebody who was way worse, who was like, oh, yeah, I am a corporate copywriter for some company that never has to copyright, because there are good writers that exist doing that as well. It was like, you're in the wrong business. I'm like, how would you know?
No, I'm honestly glad you said that. I'm not trying to insult ad copywriters because that 100% is a talent and a skill. I more meant somebody suggests you do something entirely different than you're doing now.
Can I tell you something I don't understand when it comes to DJ Burns' name? And this is a lot of people. So technically he's DJ Burns Jr. What does the J stand for in DJ? Junior.
Yeah, I would think so.
Right?
I know.
His name is Dwight Keith Burns Jr. So he's not DJ Burns Jr. The J is the junior.
That's not always true.
But in this case, it is. So we get a lot of DJs where the J is junior, and then we still call him junior. You're not DJ Burns Jr. You're DJ Burns. The J is mixed in for junior. So drop the junior or drop the J. You're not junior junior. Dwight Junior Burns Jr. is not your name.
Well, I don't know why Steve on Smith needs to... be senior. Yeah, we got it. That's why it's not junior.
Marcus Morris put senior on his jersey.
Yeah. We got it. You've got a son that
you've named
junior. Yeah. That's why it says junior next to his name.
Right.
We just assumed it's senior.
He's 2.0, but you don't need to put 1.0 on your first thing.
No.
You are the first.
You are.
You're the thing.
Yeah.
But otherwise,
now if you're at like if your cousins are talking about you and your family, and they need to make a difference between DJ Senior and DJ Junior, well, then that's acceptable.
Yeah.
But if we're watching a basketball game and we see Marcus Morris, I'm not going to confuse him for his son.
Yeah, you know, I do this in writing, and I'm actually not sure how we were talking about, you know, putting respect on Russell Westbrook's name earlier. Like, when I talk about Kyra Lewis with the Jazz, I write Kyra Lewis. Well, technically, he's Kyra Lewis Jr. Kenneth Lofton Jr. All these guys are juniors. Their dads have their same name or whoever they got their name from. But I don't always put Kenneth Lofton Jr. I don't always put Kyra Lewis Jr. when I'm writing.
You should not.
When I'm writing, you know I'm talking about Kyra Lewis. You know you recognize I'm not talking about his father, who has nothing to do with the story I'm writing.
I do.
So I can trust my audience that when I'm talking about the Utah Jazz and Kyra Lewis, I'm not talking about the father of this person who no one's ever heard of?
It is absolutely unnecessary, yes.
I think so, right?
Yes.
But I don't know if that's AP appropriate. I don't know AP style format if I'm supposed
now,
to.
Now, if Ken Griffey's on the same team as his dad, well,
one's junior.
Yeah, then maybe
senior.
You want to specify there. But yeah, I don't know what Kyra Lewis's dad is doing, but it's not playing for the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, he ain't suiting up in Utah.
So I'd say continue doing what you're doing.
Okay.
I do not think it's necessary.
It's not a disrespect to the player. It's a sign of respect for my audience that knows who I'm talking about.
Steve on Smith corrected me on air. I was like, joining us now, the great Steve Smith from Utah. He's like, hey, Steve Smith Sr. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Is your son on the phone?
He was in person. Yeah. So, of course, I was like, all right, Mr. Smith Sr., sir.
Okay, senior.
Sure. And honestly, I'll call anybody whatever they want to be called, but like it does not make any sense to me, yes.
If you have a son, you have two daughters.
I do.
Are you gonna go little JJ, little Jake Jr.? Triple J?
I had considered it, but I don't think my wife's on board.
We don't do a lot of juniors for women.
No.
I've never met a like Jesse Jr.
Well, Jesse could be a guy's name.
Sure. Okay. Lisa Jr. I don't see a lot of Lisa Jr.'s out there. Mary Ann Jr.
It's a guy thing.
It's a guy thing. Weird. Guys are so uncreative. We can't think of anyone's name.
We can't
think of anyone's name but our own. Let's put a junior on the back of it.
Apparently, okay, we're good. Hans and Scotty coming up next. Apparently, our traffic was like downtown D.C. today.
Stunning.
Hans and Scotty G are coming up next.
Thanks, Sarah Jr.
We'll talk to you on Monday. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.